Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Dirt.
They were having such a good deal on golf cleats. They didn't have any. I used to get made fun of all the time.
Sprague.
They're not called golf cleats. What are they called? Golf shoes.
The Fans U.S. Open Week edition of Dirt and Sprague.
Brought to you by Langdon Farms Golf Club. There's no better course in the Northwest for year-round golf. Book your tee time at langdonfarms.com.
Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
Hey, let's do this. Final hour, Dirt and Sprague on Portland Sports Leader 1080 The Fan. Hope your Wednesdays are going well. We got any updates on the reprieve from this smoke, man? They said end of the week. What are we hearing now?
I'm gonna go a route I shouldn't.
Okay.
Felt like there was a little more smoke outside today, and I was like, oh.
It did feel that way.
Is that a good thing, though, that more fire is being extinguished, and so... there, in turn, you get more smoke? This coming from a guy who did not read about fires today or watch any news on the fire.
I keep feeling like it's going to go away.
Does that make sense? Does that make sense what I just said?
No.
No. Okay.
No.
I woke up this morning and checked the air quality at my house, and it was the first time it had been under either the hazardous or very unhealthy. It only said unhealthy.
Okay. Well, that's good.
Ours was at the top end of that range, but.
Ours was 260 at like 430 yesterday.
See what it is right now. I'm getting a, right now on my phone, a 351 in Portland.
I can barely see across the Willamette, so that makes about, that's about right.
Okay, I was just curious, you know, it'd be nice to go outside again.
So for the extreme crowd, let me just ask you this. As much as you may hate or disagree with our opinions on COVID, football, what have you.
Would you quit being such a bitch?
If they announce that they're coming back early, but the smoke doesn't leave for 2 weeks, are you then going to scream about making them practice in it?
Indoor facilities, brah.
Yeah, because smoke doesn't get indoors. Tell that to my wife.
You tell us to us in the building today as you walk in, yeah.
I mean, I just choked in the last segment, probably on the smoke.
Yeah, we all got that going for us, huh? You want some good news, though? Did you see they're expecting a vaccine to be fully functional and return us to regular life by the third quarter of 2021?
That's about what?
Well, great, only another year.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's about a year.
Yeah, when
we're
is
close to quarter four.
Let me ask you this.
If we're not already there.
Do you guys know when quarters are?
Is it
just 4 months?
I mean, I think it's
that would be three.
Three months. They're 3 month intervals.
I'm good at math. In case you didn't know that,
so it'd be January through March.
Okay,
right, and then April through June.
We're at the tail end of quarter three.
This is so about now. You're looking at about now. But yeah, a year. There you go. Know nothing about fires. We know nothing about quarters.
I love doing the counting in our head. Counting of what, how many 3 months is averaging.
I have a college degree. Did you know?
Oh, God.
Well, mine's in communications, so, you know.
Yeah, same here.
Okay, it is a damn shame that we are 2 hours and 6 minutes into the radio show today. Do you know we have not mentioned one time?
You keep teasing this, and I cannot for the life of me figure out the hell you're talking about.
That sums up everything that's going on right now, which I do want to take a moment to just appreciate because, you know, remember how bad April, May, and June were? That was not fun. So at least we're in that position.
Is it different? I didn't get that notice.
We have not talked about Bam Adebayo's block.
Man. That was nasty.
We have not mentioned that on the show. 2 hours and 6 minutes in. That, by the way, look, this is going to be a hot take, so just brace yourselves.
Okay.
Now, I get that there have been blocks made in bigger situations. LeBron chased down NBA Finals Game 7.
It's the greatest block of all time.
That's hard to top.
Yeah.
That is the most important block of all time. Oh. That was not a better block than what Bam did last night.
I disagree with
you. I will not listen to that on any level. Fine. He was getting dunked on. His hand was going into the hoop. It flexed all the way backwards.
Yeah.
LeBron's big. He chased down a guy, blocked it out the backboard. Incredible.
Oh, that's all it is.
Incredible.
Big, he just chased him down.
In the right place, right time. Dude, this guy, his wrist got bent in half, and he still made that block on Tatum, which saved the game and won the game.
And they did say that it was the first like block on what would have been a go-ahead field goal in the final seconds of a playoff game since they started tracking play-by-play in the late 90s.
Dude, that was crazy.
Okay. I'm not going to dive into the LeBron thing because then it would make the segment about LeBron. I totally disagree with the fact that you disregard that block the way you did.
I'm not disregarding it.
Well, you kind of just like, oh, he's big, he blocked it.
Guy couldn't even block J.J. Barea. It's never, neither here nor there.
Because you always see superstars chase down on big plays.
And C.J. McCollum does it. He doesn't even play defense.
Okay. That being said, I am with you lockstep. I'm probably forgetting, as you are and
I'm sure
other people out there, there are probably blocks in our life that we watched.
Yeah.
That, I said probably openly to me, is the second biggest block I've ever seen. And the fact that you have a young guy digital world, by the way, where that could have gone so wrong for him and been replayed a million times over.
Yeah.
He was willing to put his hand up. And as you mentioned, it bent into the hoop. His hand is in the cylinder.
Yeah, it was like the Matrix dude leaning backwards to dodge bullets. That's what his hand did.
And have the strength to carry it down and deny him in that spot? I lost my mind. I was watching this, and my 8-year-old and my wife were watching with me on the couch. They had no vested interest. They didn't know the teams that were playing at the moment. But she could tell that I had gambled on the Miami Heat. And in the moment, I stood up and went, oh, my God, what a play!
Yeah.
And watching the replay of that, incredible.
It's incredible.
And I'll say it one more time for the crowd in the back. You may have missed it. My biggest concern, I can't help but do this, is that when we look back, 2017's draft's going to bite us in the ass.
Mm-hmm.
And I still have said this, and this is not an attack. I genuinely would be curious to hear Neil's notes on why he thought Zach over Bam was the pick for them. That being said, phenomenal play by a young player who does nothing more than fit in perfectly with their group.
He's the heart and soul of that team, which is pretty incredible for a third-year guy. Jimmy Butler basically said that after the game last night. He said he's the heart and soul. I'm just taking Jimmy Buckets' words.
I think Jimmy Buckets does, you know, say what you want about Jimmy Buckets. I think he does an exceptional job in those moments. Jimmy is the heart and soul.
This, looking at their numbers, by the way, if you want to get really depressed today, you know, because what else is there to be sad about? Bam Adebayo in his worst season was his rookie year.
Mm-hmm.
He played about 20 minutes a game. He averaged 7 points and 5.5 rebounds. That's his worst season. This year was Zach Collins' best season, and he averaged 7 points and 6 rebounds.
Yeah.
And that's a kind of, I mean, when you look at players and the way they develop, you really look at year three and say, that's the year you've been around. Bam was a one and done guy, if I'm not mistaken, or was he two?
I'll go back and look. He was
a young
guy.
I know he's 23 right now. It's his third year in the league. So either 1 or 2 years of college, but he comes out, you kind of cut your teeth a little bit. He played 19 minutes as a rookie, 23 minutes last year, jumps up to be a full-time starter this year, about 35 minutes a game, and he's averaging 16 and 10.
A one and done guy.
One and done guy. So you look at those, it takes a couple years to develop. That's the year you're supposed to take that jump. He is taking that jump, and it's incredible what, and it's, I think we forget this from time to time. Like, we only pay attention to NBA drafts when your team usually has a top 10 pick. Like, if Portland's in the lottery, that kind of stuff, you focus on it, and we tend to somewhat disregard late first-round picks or mid-first-round picks. Like, to get a guy like that at 14th overall, that changes the trajectory of the, I don't even know if I said that word right, it changes the path for the Miami Heat completely, and they got him 14th overall.
Well, we kicked the segment off being stupid. I will say, you said the word properly.
Trajectory.
Yeah. You know, that one wasn't right. Coach Cal said this, and Brad Stevens kind of had a similar comment on young players, right? Like Tatum on Boston and Bam on Miami. They were both asked, hey, when did you really know you were on this guy's? And Brad Stevens says, first game Jason Tatum played, which was against Florida at the Garden. Yeah. First game he played, Boston had an off night. Brad Stevens watched him. He goes, that's when I knew. First game.
Guy's good.
Bam, in John Calipari's point, when was the time you knew Bam was special and different?
He said the first time I saw him play. Yeah. He's athletic. Yeah, he's only 6'9". He's got a 7'2 wingspan. When you have a 7'2 wingspan at 6'9", your height is almost irrelevant. He's super athletic. He can switch on any screen with anybody. He can handle the rock, not as well as others, but he can handle the rock. Mm-hmm. He's really good at passing. He sets mean screens. He never gives up on plays.
He had 9 assists last night.
He's an active defender. Like, he is your dream lineup for what you would want here in Portland. He fits that.
Him with Nurkic takes you to a different level completely.
Oh.
Or him in the place of Nurkic.
Yeah, I mean, no, I'd put him with Nurk. He'd make sense.
Imagine that starting lineup.
He doesn't need to be a paint player. He can be, but he doesn't need to be, which makes sense with what Nurkic is. And to Nurkic's credit, he was hitting some perimeter shots in the bubble.
Dame, CJ Hood, Bam Adebayo, and Nurkic as your starting lineup.
I get jealous of these teams, and I still think Portland's going to be good next year, but I do. I get jealous of these teams with these young players that we just said, not quite good enough for our reasons, for whatever. And you watch them thrive, and God, the fit he has with that Miami team. He may not be, in my opinion, like the full tone setter, but him, Tyler Hero's confidence and just cockiness and belief in himself, Goran Dragic basically going his whole career but not being ever mentioned in the top point guard tier.
Yeah, really good underrated player.
Jimmy Buckets, people dismiss him, laugh at him as a top, number one on a team, seems to be going well. Jay Crowder, every avenue, Kendrick Nunn, Duncan Robinson, their whole makeup is what you would want in full team basketball. And to watch him make a play, I think it about summed it up. Tyler Hero made big defensive plays, hit big shots, got Jimmy on an outlet pass. Jimmy hits big shots, Jay Crowder hits big shots, and Bam meeting somebody at the rim when he could have easily just been dunked on and embarrassed on social media.
Yeah,
I loved it. I love watching him play. They are, of the teams left, I think they're my favorite team to watch. I like them a little more than Boston. Boston may still win that series. I like them more than Denver, and Denver plays great team basketball. And as much as I love watching LeBron play, and I've always defend LeBron in the all-time conversation, Miami is my favorite team to watch because of all of those pieces willing to do what it takes to fit in together and get a dub.
I'd be cool with them winning the title. They had an abysmal third quarter. They were outscored by 12, bounced back in the fourth, outscored Boston 35-23. Sent it to overtime. They won in overtime last night. Game one of the Eastern Conference Finals, capped off by that Bam block. And I was glad that they won, too, because the way that Boston tied the game to send it to overtime was complete horse crap. Like, they pushed Tatum into, like, who was it? Was it Jones that they pushed him into? Whoever was guarding him, they shoved Tatum into it.
It was Derek Jones got Derek shoved, Jones, right? And then Marcus Smart loves to flop.
Marcus, that's who it was. Yeah, Marcus Smart flopped down to the ground. They got the two free throws because it's a foul before you inbounds the ball. And then thankfully they missed the shot at the buzzer, but that sent them to overtime. Boston had some really bad possessions late in that game. But, man, it was incredible. It just sums up everything going on in the sports world. If you would have asked me when that block happened, I would have told you that would have been one of the bigger stories on the show today. And then you got Game 7, Denver-LA, which distracted all of us, and then the Big Ten decision, and everybody's been – it just kind of – you forget about it, man. But it was incredible last night, and Miami's a lot of fun to watch. They win Game 1.
Are we – if Denver doesn't win – LeBron going for the fourth ring against his former team.
Against the Miami Heat.
That could be fun.
Spare me the Lakers-Celtics series. I do not want any part of that.
Well.
I don't want, no.
It's a very real possibility.
No.
I hate to tell you that.
Please don't give me that one again. Did you know the history? Did you know they faced like 10 times in the 80s? Kobe, Paul Pierce.
I can't wait for Mark Jackson's opening bit when they open the NBA Finals, if that's the matchup.
Oh, God, it's going to be insufferable.
I know. How about Van Gundy calling Jokic the best passing big man of all time, too?
That's another thing that needs to get discussed. He said it's over. The debate's over. It's not even a conversation. It's done.
Didn't know the debate started, but okay, I'm in.
It's over. I mean, he did have 13 assists last night, but aren't we forgetting a few good ones? Okay, we got a lot to get to, but let's get to your favorite segment, Stat or Story next on The Fan.
This is a U.S. Open Week edition of Dirt and Sprague.
Brought to you by Langdon Farms Golf Club.
On 1080 The Fan.
Crunch the numbers.
There's 6,127 students at Adams, 58% of which are girls. So that's 7,107.32 boobs.
Break the news.
Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention? I've just been handed an urgent and horrifying news story.
Is it a stat or a story?
Evidence based on olfactory prowess is inadmissible, in case you didn't know.
This is Stat or Story, a monumental judgment call with Dirt and Sprague on 1080.
Come on, don't mess.
The Fan.
By the way, it should be noted that the wonderful listeners of this fine radio show have chimed in at 503-250-1080.
Mm-hmm.
Unanimous consent. I'm right.
On what?
Bam's block was better.
Yeah, like 80% of people love to hate LeBron. It's like a pastime for people. It's unbelievable. The Game 7 block saved to win a championship for
See,
a team.
No, hold on. You're changing the conversation.
Stop.
You're changing the conversation.
Stop.
What's the better basketball block?
LeBron.
The better basketball block.
A chase down block.
I'm not talking game
on a
situation.
6'8 athletic player.
Okay, hold on. If I show you the two blocks side by side with no understanding of what the game time and situation is, what's the better block?
LeBron.
What am
really?
I missing here?
Really? An at the rim block with both guys that are 6'8, one guy is 7'2 with a wingspan. Like, it's an amazing play. Somehow we're pinning now.
You're being a little bitch over there.
I'm not being a little bitch. It's LeBron. It's everything you ask.
I could not disagree more.
It's everything you ask of your number one player and you teach kids.
Oh, I'm not.
Don't give up on a play.
Sure.
Always chase it down. Always make an effort. And by the way, lead by example. It's literally everything you teach people growing up playing basketball.
Sure. I'm not disagreeing with any of that.
If I met you at the rim, yeah, I'm at the rim. You're at the rim. There's nothing else for me to do other than maybe take a charge, but I'm too under the rim. It's a phenomenal block.
Of course it is.
This is just people loving to hate LeBron James. It's a pastime for sports fans.
I disagree with you on that one. I think the significance of the block will never be matched because it was game seven and it helped them win an NBA championship.
That's part of the equation, though.
Oh, for sure it is. I'm not ever taking away the significance of it. The Bam's block was game one of the Eastern Conference Finals, which is big. I mean, it's a big situation, but it's not game seven of the NBA Finals. But I think if you just showed like the blocks and which one was more impressive, to me it was Bam. All right, let's get to Statter Story. Russ, what do we got today?
Let's see here. Your number is 191. Is it the total number of points scored by Nikola Jokic in their 7-game series against the Clippers? Or is it the number of years DG Yingling and Sung, America's oldest brewer, have been brewing its cheap German-style lager that will soon be available for the first time in the Western states?
Yeah, Yingling's coming west, man. What was the number again?
191.
How many points he scored?
How many, the total number of points scored by Nikola Jokic in the 7-game series.
I'm going to get this wrong. I'm going to go stat.
I know Yingling's the oldest brewer.
Wouldn't it be a little old nut? Am I wrong? Because you're already in 2020. The oldest brewer?
Over there Googling it or something?
No, I'm not Googling. No. I was doing what the points per game would be if that was the points. And it'd be 27 points per game. That seems a little high,
but
doesn't
it? You say what? 121, right?
191.
191. I don't know. I feel like I see beer bottles that are like started brewing in 1802. Probably wrong on that. I'm going stat.
I'm gonna go story.
It is a story.
Damn it.
Nikola Jokic scored 171 total points. Over
so
the
just
course
about
of the
25 a game, yeah. Something like that.
Yeah. He's had 20 rebounds and 13 assists.
Well, even last night in the win, it wasn't like he went crazy scoring wise.
No, in fact, you
look
at their
stats. Game, but he didn't light him up for like 30.
Jamal Murray was the guy to torch him. They collectively did not shoot well from three. Like, all the stats point into the Clippers' favor. Greif put that out.
Yeah, 35% from three.
Turnovers, free throw disparity. It was all in the Clippers' favor.
And they turned it over 20 times to 10 for L.A.
And if I showed you the score, you would have never guessed that.
Yeah, Jokic only had 16 last night, but 22 rebounds and 13 assists.
Yinglings, DG Yingling and Son, they have been brewing since 1829. They're about 2 hours northwest of Philadelphia, and they announced a joint venture with Molson Coors to break out beyond its traditional 22-state distribution area in the east.
People in the Northeast love to make you drink Yingling when you go out there.
Really?
That's like their claim to fame. We got Yingling. And Yingling's, it's good. It's a serviceable IPA. I'm not going to dump on Yingling. But I don't know if it's ever going to get into the footholds. I don't even know if that's the right phrase, in the West Coast. We have so many good IPAs out here.
Yeah,
we
but I bet you
are.
Some of the novel, it'll be novel. It'll be something new. So
okay,
maybe
you might
have a good
initial
start with it or something, but yeah.
Yeah, but
it's like, dude, if you give me
and
any good Oregon brewery, like our great friends at Pelican or any of the other great breweries,
I was
gonna
say,
I'm buying that over.
I'm not sure that's the market they're trying to bust into, because even on here they call it cheap German-style lager.
You going like Henry Weinard's, like a cheaper
I mean, we're so
nice beer.
Locally driven with our brews, though, and I know to your point, Russ, that's not the market they're hitting, but we're so loyal. I mean, I had a moment the other day, a few weeks back, where I just was watching a game drinking a pub beer. Standard 10-barrel pub beer. And I said, oh, it's a great day. I had like three people tweet me, you're not going to go local. You're supporting them. And I just thought, whoa, it's just one beer.
I just had one, man.
You know, 10 Barrel was started here. And, but
settle
they
down,
sold
Francis.
Out. It's like, oh, okay.
Yeah, somebody says it's like Sam Adams. It's very similar to Sam Adams.
Right.
You know, it's like, it's, yeah.
There's nothing wrong with
nothing wrong with Sam Adams.
I like
the summer shandy.
Alrighty. Your next number is 37.
37.
Is it the number of three-point attempts Paul George missed in their seven-game series against the Nuggets? Or is it the amount of weight in kilograms a new AI robot waiter in South Korea can carry at once that is being used by a restaurant to minimize human contact during the COVID pandemic?
Hmm. 37. I'm trying to think of how much a tray of food would weigh. I've never been a server before. You got a couple of plates, a couple of beverages on there. Are we getting north of 37 pounds?
I've served food before. I've served a couple big orders. I mean, they feel heavy, but yeah, I'm trying to think because my kid was 37 pounds.
Can you hold her up in one hand?
Well, and this is in kilograms.
Oh,
oh my God.
Damn it, Rust. Nobody told me conversion was that math would Swigard? Be a part of the show.
Be Swigard.
Yeah, of course it's Swigard. What a nerd.
Well, you know, the rest of the world uses kilograms in the metric system.
Yeah, you know what? They're wrong.
Stat.
What are we doing Celsius now, too? What is it, like 7 degrees outside
today?
That's
when I can't wrap my head around.
I'll go story because I hope he missed more than that.
It is a stat.
Damn.
He missed 37 three-pointers in their seven-game series against the Nuggets. Let's see here. Aglio Kim, a trolley-like robot which uses artificial intelligence, is delivering food to customers at a restaurant in Seoul in order to minimize human contact. Shortly after customers order through a touchscreen on the table, the 1.25 meter tall robot, so that's roughly look at 4 feet.
4 foot robot, okay.
Developed by South Korean telecoms company KT Corp, brings the food and uses its visual slam, simultaneous localization and mapping capabilities to avoid obstacles and navigate around corners. So just for your conversion references.
Sure.
30 kilograms is just over 66 pounds.
Okay.
I
That'd
won't
be a little
that
weird to get a robot serving you food, wouldn't it?
Right.
Like, I want the waiters to stay safe, but that's a little strange.
Like I said, yeah, I can carry, basically you can serve like 4 tables.
Okay.
At once. That
is it like, do they do it like the, like when you go to a Chinese restaurant, you can spin the thing around
right,
in the middle of the table? You just get that as a server. It just parks in between 4 tables and you spin it.
You know, I know business is business, but I've always said, if you tell me we move towards robotic waiters, servers, what have you, I won't be stunned. There's an element that I will always firmly believe to my core. Like, we just need to do what we can to not lose those jobs.
Yeah.
Right.
They help a lot of people, man. I did it. I made a lot of money in tips.
I spent 13 years in restaurants.
I mean, the lifestyle, it's different. But, man, when you're doing it and in it, you kind of love it. You're getting off late. Hey, let's go get post-work drinks. It's 2 a.m. Like, there's an element of that that I just do not want to ever eliminate.
Yeah, yeah.
But I heard a theory on that. And then I also heard, like, do we get to a point where they just digitally create actors? We don't even have humans anymore acting. And I'm like, God, that's terrifying.
That would be.
The human nature and the human element is part of what ropes you in for movies.
Would the acting be better, though?
You could probably program it, too.
Yeah.
They've had movies before, and I know they use CGI on some of those people, but.
It's like Hulu commercials. All the movies are going to be like that someday.
Dude, that is. I hate the Baker, Damian Lillard Hulu commercials.
This isn't my body.
They're not even their face.
Look at my skinny legs.
It's weird. They're not even voiced by Dame.
I know. Dame doesn't even sound like his voice.
Did they need it done and he was in the bubble and they said, nah, we're not doing it.
Yeah, close enough. Sounds like him.
Dame's like, goodbye me.
What the hell?
Your final number is 100.
100.
Is it the combined margin of loss for Doc Rivers coach teams in playoff elimination games, the fifth worst mark in NBA history? Or is it the prize amount in dollars of a winning lottery scratch-off ticket in Georgia? A local sheriff's office is hoping a suspect will come claim after he left it trying to elude authorities in Cherokee County.
Whoa. It just in a playoff elimination games?
Yes.
I mean, he's lost a lot of those over the years.
I've said what I've said about Doc Rivers.
He's been a coach for, like, what, 20 years now in the NBA? He's been around a long time.
Big staple in the league. A voice that's needed. A good coach. Slightly overrated in where he falls all time.
Yeah.
He's also a big benefactor of talent lining up perfectly for him.
Yeah, because he was going to be out of a job in Boston. And then they landed the big three and he won an NBA championship.
Remember, he blew a 3-1 lead in Orlando.
Yeah.
He's not new to this.
He's done it three times now, only coach to do that. I'll say story, though. I feel like that guy's lost a lot. I mean, he's only won one championship in his career, so there's a lot of elimination games in there. And I'm going to say he's...
What was the number again? Say one more time.
It's got to be 100. North of 100. 100. I mean, hell, they lost by like 20 last night, didn't they? That's
they
a
did.
Big chunk of it. It's got to be more than 100.
I'll go stat.
It is a story.
Damn it.
Doc Rivers has a collective margin of loss of minus 84.
Oh, well, I'm an idiot.
That puts him at the fifth worst. Fifth worst all time.
There's a lot of close losses in there.
That was a classic. Dirt got it right, but for the wrong reasons.
Show my work.
He trails Mike Fratello of the Cavs and Hawks, I believe, Dwayne Casey, Doug Moe of the old Nuggets teams, and Cotton Fitzsimmons with a collective minus 125 for Cotton Fitzsimmons.
Yeah.
And then the winning lottery scratch off. A suspect in Georgia left his good luck behind when he abandoned a winning lottery ticket while fleeing sheriff's deputies. They say the man had a Georgia lottery scratch game card worth $100 when he ran away during a traffic stop on I-75. In a Facebook post, it offered its congratulations and invited him to claim the ticket at his office in Canton, about 40 miles north of Atlanta.
Now, let me ask you this. What is the winning amount on that ticket have to be to get you to go back?
Well, it depends on the infraction and what kind of fines and jail time I think you're looking at.
Because you're running from the cops for a reason.
Yeah. Said he was later taken into custody. He was not
identified. $5,000, is that enough? $10,000? Like what? $50,000? How high do you have to get? Because $100 ain't worth it. If you're an idiot to go back for that, your fines are going to be more than $100. You're going to get thrown in jail for running from the cops.
And here's what Baker said. The man was a passenger in a vehicle that was pulled over for a tag violation, and he ran into the woods. The lottery ticket was in a backpack that also had methamphetamine, according to Baker. The man can have the lottery ticket back, but the sheriff's office said it will keep the drugs.
Damn.
He's just carrying some meth in a backpack. What do you want from the guy?
Meth!
I want to see that visual of them pulling up to talk to the guy on the driver's side and him just bolting out the passenger side into the woods. Running away.
Sorry, I'm a little distracted here. I hate to do this. Kate Brown just released a statement.
Oh, we got a statement?
It's back in the Pac-12's court.
Oh, okay. Hold on.
We can get to it next.
Good news. We have good news, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, it's good news unless you just not think of the Pac-12 is taking this seriously as a conference.
All right, we got a breaking news statement from Kate Brown. We will read that coming up on the other side. I'll let you know what she has to say. But first, here's Russ with SportsCenter.
Early one morning while making the rounds, I took a shot of cocaine and I shot my woman down.
This is a U.S. Open Week edition of Dirt and Sprague.
Brought to you by Langdon Farms Golf Club.
On 1080 The Fan.
All right, welcome back in. 2:37. Let's get to this big story today. It's been the Big Ten Return to Play Initiative. We've all wondered, what does it mean for the Pac-12? Larry Scott released a statement today that said it's up to Oregon and California governors. Gavin Newsom said, we're good to go. Don't worry about us.
Well, he said basically, that it's another thing to change your policies.
Now we have a statement from Kate Brown, the governor of Oregon. Here is what it reads. Governor Kate Brown, this is a statement released by her spokesperson, Charles Boyle. Said Governor Brown is today meeting with firefighters and first responders and members of the incident management teams who have been on the front lines working to save Oregonian lives and homes from the devastation of wildfires. Representatives of the University of Oregon and Oregon State University athletic departments met with Oregon Health Authority this afternoon to discuss their COVID-19 health and safety plans for their football teams. The universities have asked for an exemption to OHA's sports guidance, just as Oregon's professional sports teams have been given. We have granted that request, and under new guidance, OHA must receive written plans for approval. Let me stress that up to this point, we have received no written plans from the Pac-12 for the upcoming season. We have no details from the conference about their new rapid testing proposal. Until we have those details, we can't move forward with the process. We want Oregon and Oregon State's players to be able to focus on football while protecting their health and safety. We also want to ensure that team practices will not be derailed by COVID-19 outbreak that would threaten the health of not only the players and the coaches, but the university communities and the wider communities and Eugene and Corvallis. So two parts here. First, they have granted the request from Oregon and Oregon State after a meeting today. That's good news. Now we're just waiting on, I don't know why the plans haven't been submitted yet. They need to get written plans from the Pac-12 about the upcoming season. And it sounds like once they get that, there's not going to be anything to stop
them.
Well,
this, I think, goes to our earlier point. Larry Scott sent out the statement. I thought it was a smart statement because it kind of put the ball in governor's courts and kind of took it out of his and the president's. All right. They've both responded. Newsom saying you can absolutely play, despite some evidence that he's holding teams to just 12-person pockets.
Mm-hmm.
Brown is being pretty open, I think, in this specific case of saying we need written guidelines. If you're sending out a statement, putting it on two states, I would have just imagined you had protocol and plans in action to then submit to said governors after they were asked about this question. And now we find out if the Pac-12 can do this in 24 hours. You get the presidents on a call. They should be on one right now.
Yeah.
Chancellors, whoever from different universities. Remember, Michael Shill, the president of Oregon, is kind of the lead of this within the presidents of the Pac-12.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't have something to announce tomorrow of a plan of action moving forward with antigen testing, we can't sit here and just blame governors because we hate them politically. It's kind of on the presidents and the commissioner of the Pac-12.
Yeah.
You get that in order and then gets put back in both governors' courts. Then it's Brown and Newsom who really weigh your full future. And if they sign off on it, again, I think this points the timeline. You can get to a point conceivably when the smoke clears where maybe in a week we're looking at them starting practice and you get 4 to 5 week buildup and you get on the Big Ten scheduling. But we'll have to wait and see on that one because now it's up to the Pac-12.
Yeah, all eyes are on them now. We kind of knew that was going to happen once the Big Ten announced their stuff this morning and what their season was going to look like. They've long been a follower of the Big Ten. It was the case when the conferences shut down a couple of months back and decided to not play at the start of the year. And I had no surprise to me that that's likely going to be the case now with the return to football as well. It is a little strange that the Pac-12 hasn't had any dialogue with the authorities in Oregon or California. They might have been California, I'm not sure, but at least in Oregon about what their testing plan looks like. Because when they announced that agreement, they did a whole press conference where they had medical officials and people from the testing company, and Larry Scott was there, and they said this. They explained all of it and why it was great and how it's going to look. So they clearly have that information. Maybe they just didn't think it was going to come to a head this quick and they needed to meet with state authorities. But knowing that that agreement is in place and you know what your testing is going to look like, I wouldn't imagine the phone call and the presentation is going to take that long.
You're right? Copying and pasting the Big Ten here. Just take every single thing they did.
Give us the thumbs up.
Yeah, you're using the same testing guidance. Take everything they just did. Submit it to your local governors that you're waiting on. If we're just talking football, there is no understanding to me, hold on, Russ, that you couldn't announce tomorrow, all right, we're back in action.
Yeah.
Why is it they have nothing from the Pac-12 already?
That's a great question.
Like kind of a pretty big ball to be dropping.
Think you'd have that just kind of, as soon as you inked that deal, that was what, 2 weeks ago now, right?
Give or take about 2 weeks ago,
I remember camping, I saw that story. If you got that deal done, you're... Protocol moving forward, I'd imagine in that next week to two would have been written up or talked about. And to Russ's point, why isn't that
planning a night out with the wife and forgetting to book the babysitter.
Or knowing what you're doing on the night out. You're like, yeah, let's go out tonight. Right. She's like, okay, great. What are we doing?
Yeah, the only thing I can think of is, and it's not a good argument, is that they were just caught flat-footed not thinking the Big Ten was going to move this quick. That they thought maybe the Big Ten was going to stick with their Thanksgiving plan.
That's an even bigger indictment.
Yeah, that's the only thing I can think of why they wouldn't.
I know you're kind of playing devil's advocate there. I don't believe that for a second.
Yeah, so they have not reached out to the state of Oregon yet to this point. But the fact that Kate Brown in a statement today has acknowledged that the Oregon and Oregon State have been asked... They have asked for an exemption for the Oregon Health Authority sports guidance in terms of returning the way that the professional teams, the Timbers, the Blazers, have had to do as well.
And all the NFL teams in California.
Right, all the NFL teams in California, they've done it as well. And the governor has granted that request. So they basically are now saying you must receive written plans for the approval. And there's a whole thing of what all the minutiae that they have to go through in terms of writing out the approval to get back to playing. So you need to go through that step, and then the Pac-12 has to call them up and say, here's our testing protocol. This is what our rapid testing is going to look like. Here's our proposal. And once you do that, it doesn't sound like, at least here's where I'll close. The good news today is that both Gavin Newsom and Kate Brown have come out and said, we are not going to stand in the way of this.
Well, Kate, I mean, look, I'm not the biggest fan, and I get a lot of people hate her. not diving into that, she made that abundantly clear months ago that she was not going to get in the way of either program if they could show proper guidelines and steps to do it safely. She just reiterated her point.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the...
That's at least been the consistent here locally on a government level.
That's a pretty big... That's at least a big development because I've heard from a lot of folks, and I had a tweet yesterday saying, you know, I think they're going to follow the Big Ten's plan, just give it some time. But the main thing I've heard from is that the authorities will stand in the way. The Kay Brown or Gavin Newsom will stand in the way and not let this happen.
Yeah.
And that at least, as we're concluding a show on Wednesday, that is not going to be the case.
One quick question. So if the Pac-12 can get its S together and try to at least be somewhat on the heels of the Big Ten.
Yeah.
Will we see perhaps a trickle of players starting to opt back in? Because just a couple of minutes ago, Wyatt Davis of Ohio State has decided to opt back in. And Sean Wade, I believe, I saw this morning that he's kind of like...
He's considering it,
the Nebraska kid, right?
No, he's the Ohio State DB he was talking about the other day.
Sorry. There's also a tight end for Penn State. Many had speculated was out. He actually went on the Big Ten Network during James Franklin's interview and said, I never opted out. I'm in. So I think, Russ, to your point, I think Sewell already hired an agent.
And that's the thing with Wade at Ohio State, too, is that he has an agent, but he said that he hasn't signed with him. So that's a little murky area. But
I'll say, whatever these kids end up deciding, like, nobody's going to fault them either way. If Lenore and Graham do it because they think they can help draft stock, great. Mm-hmm. I hate Duck fans. Not gonna like hearing this. I would never tell Sue to come back. Go get ready for the NFL.
Yeah, there's
big
a
guy.
Difference between being a mid round pick and being a top three pick.
Maybe
there's
even a number difference. One, depending on who gets it. If Cincinnati sucks, I think they're going to be looking for a left tackle, and he's supposedly going to be the best one in this class.
Yeah, there's no reason to risk anything.
I don't think you benefit anything. No. You don't help your draft stock. If he does, God bless him. He wants to be part of the team.
I think it's a moot point anyways. I think Sewell's hired an agent.
But I think there's build now. So many different topics we're getting to here. There has been build rumbling for the NCAA to allow signed agent players to get a waiver to opt back in because of the circumstance.
Because of the craziness of the year.
I don't know if he would.
That makes sense.
I wouldn't tell him to, but if he does, then that changes everything for Oregon, too.
Well, I think, again, it's important to remind people that there are conferences playing right now, and you've had a ton of guys that have opted out and are not playing for programs that are already in action right now in the SEC, the ACC, and the Big 12. So I take this as pretty good news. The Pac-12's got to get on their horse and get that approval up to the state of Oregon and to the state of California. I'm assuming the same thing will apply down there. But Kate Brown saying they've granted the Oregon and Oregon State the exemption to begin football pending the submission of a written plan. And so the Pac-12 and Oregon and Oregon State got to get that to Kate Brown and bada bing, bada boom, we can have football.
The testing that sounds like where you can pick it up before it's even contagious. It's an absolute game changer. If you really think you can do this safely and that's your concern, that's the Big Ten. It was settled there. Get on this tomorrow.
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of where you're at.
Yep. All right. Let's wrap up. We got some poll questions to get to and a radio fight that happened. Let's close up there next on The Fam.
This is how we do it.
This is a U.S. Open Week edition of Dirt and Sprague.
Brought to you by Langdon Farms Golf Club.
On 1080 The Fan.
All right, on air producing. Do we want to save our Houston radio fight for tomorrow? Because there could be a little meat on that bone.
I have nothing to add. I've made it abundantly clear. It's in the Pac-12's court now, and they have to respond. Like, whether you want to do the season or not, we're going to find out in 24 hours. It's not hard to have a plan. You copied what the Big Ten did when you postponed. Copy what the Big Ten did with your testing and your protocols and everything else. And also add a note about the wildfire smoke and how a lot of people are dealing with really serious issues, and it's hard to breathe. So, you have that. Address those. It's now your turn, Pac-12, so I don't really have anything to add. So it's up to you if you want to play the audio or save it.
I think we'll save it because a couple other things I want to get to in this segment. We'll save that. Thanks for cutting that up, Russ. We'll get to that tomorrow. There was a funny fight on the air in Houston radio yesterday that went kind of viral last night.
I know one of the people. Like I don't know, but I follow them.
Yeah, we've had one of the guys on the show, I think, before.
He's not acknowledged publicly that this is
neither of them
there.
Have, because that was my first thing when I saw it. I went to find their Twitter accounts to see if either of them tweeted about it, and they're acting like it did not happen.
Well, somebody on their broadcast within house leaked that to back after this. And that's how we all saw it. So
I want to rattle through some poll questions quickly, and then we'll get to the U.S. Open because that's a big deal. Starts tomorrow. The Big Ten voted to return, begin their season on October 24th, leaving the Pac-12 as the only one on the outside looking in. What will their season look like? 45% of people say they're going to join the Big Ten and start on 10/24. That's looking more likely now. 21% said they're not going to play at all.
I mean,
I'm a little surprised by that, like at all.
You know, are you? I don't think people have any trust in the Pac-12 and its leadership.
Like not even in January, not in November. 19% of you say they started Thanksgiving, and then 13% say they play coming up in January. We asked, what would the long-term ramifications be for the Pac-12 if they're the only conference to not play this fall? 34% say they'll be fine. 29% say it might take a few years. 19% said it could take a decade to recover. And then 16% of you say they're done as a conference.
I disagree with that. I mean, I see why you feel that way, but USC could be a year or two away from finding the right coach, and then they turn it around.
A year from now, they hire Urban Meyer. What's the narrative around USC?
Oregon is recruiting at an all-time pace, better than they ever have, easily, and they're the top recruiter in the country, and they show no signs of letting up. They're recruiting, by the way, in the right areas, the trenches, which what matter most in college football. Jimmy Lake, we'll see what you can do at UW, but you know they're still okay. Herm's been kind of sexy on the recruiting trail with his NFL, you know, college to NFL model. Mm-hmm. And if David Shaw and Stanford can turn this around, they're going to get the top players that are smart, and they'll be right back where they were.
Yeah.
It's been doom and gloom for a while. This is not just COVID Larry Scott now related. They've had a lot of hiccups. I think they can turn around in a year.
All right, tomorrow, most importantly, of course, this week, the U.S. Open begins at famed Wingfoot. This is the sixth time now that Wingfoot has hosted the U.S. Open. I think only two courses have hosted more than that. Did you know, Brandon Sprague, that when it was held there in 1974, it was dubbed the Massacre at Wingfoot because the winner was 7 over par?
Yeah, and Colin Morikawa has kind of highlighted this.
Oh, they are.
It's going to be in the pluses.
Wild, dude.
The winner could be at, like, as Swag mentioned, +6.
Yeah, the USGA, whoever ran the USGA back then said, we're not trying to humiliate the best players in the world. We're simply trying to identify them. And the winner was at +7. You got a winner?
Woo.
Give me your winner, U.S. Open winner.
I am going to go with my guy, Morikawa.
Back-to-back majors?
It's hard not to pick Dustin Johnson, though.
Okay.
Even with the conditions and him not knowing that course, hard not to pick him.
He's playing incredible right now. I'm going to go with Rory McIlroy. Rory McIlroy is my pick.
You're not going Ricky Fowler? You seem to want to do that all the time.
I do like picking my boy Ricky, but he let me down in the PGA Championship. Rory just had a kid, man. I'm going with the baby boom. He's good. If you've got those good vibes going after having a baby. All right, there you go. Good little show. If you missed any of it, Les Schwab Tires podcast, 1080thefan.com. We'll have more on the U.S. Open coming up tomorrow. I'm sure there's going to be more on the Pac-12. If you miss it, we had Stuart Mandel on our show earlier. You can go check that one out at Dirt and Sprague and at 1080thefan. Thank you for being a part of our Wednesday. We'll talk to you tomorrow at noon. Number one's next. Listen to 1080 The Fan.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.